Enemy in Sight, written by Alexander Kent and read by Michael Chaston.
No captain can do very wrong if he places his ship alongside that of an enemy. Horatio Nelson. Chapter 1. A Time for Parting. The tall window of the Golden Lion Inn, which faced south across Plymouth Sound, shivered violently in its frame as another freak gust speckled the glass with drizzle and blown spray. Captain Richard Bolitho had been standing with his back to a blazing log fire, his hands behind him, as he stared unseeingly at the bedroom carpet, and the sudden flurry of wind made him look up, his mind dragging with the mixed emotions of urgency and a new alien sense of apprehension at leaving the land. He crossed quickly to the window and stood looking down across the deserted roadway, the shining cobbles and the grey tossing water beyond. It was 8 o'clock in the morning, but being the first day of November, was still almost too dark to see much more than a blurred grey panorama through the dappled glass. He could hear voices beyond the bedroom door, the sound of horses and wheels in the yard below, and knew that the moment of parting had almost arrived. He stooped over a long brass telescope, which was mounted on a tripod by the window, no doubt for the benefit of inn-guests, or the amusement of those who saw the passing ships of war as nothing more than things of beauty or momentary distraction. It was strange to realise that 1794 was drawing to a close, that England had been at war with revolutionary France for nearly 2 years, and still there were many people who were either indifferent or totally unaware of their peril. Perhaps the news had been too good, he thought vaguely, and certainly this year had gone well at sea. Howe's conquest, the glorious 1st of June, as it was now called, Jarvis's capture of the French West Indian Islands, and even the taking of Corsica in the Mediterranean, should have meant that the way was already opening up for total victory. But Bolitho knew better than to accept such ready judgments. The war was spreading in every direction, so that it seemed as if it would eventually engulf the whole world. And England, in spite of her ships, was being forced back further and further upon her own resources. He eased the telescope carefully to one side, seeing the serried whitecaps cruising across the sound, the wedge of headland and the hurrying ranks of leaden clouds. The wind was freshening from the northwest, and there was a hint of snow in the air. He held his breath and steadied the glass on a solitary ship which lay far out, seemingly motionless and making the only patch of colour against the bleak sea. The Hyperion, his ship, was waiting for him. It was hard, no, impossible, to picture her as the battered, shot-scarred two-decker he had brought to Plymouth 6 months earlier, after her desperate fight in the Mediterranean following Hood's failure to hold and occupy Toulon. 6 months of pleading and bribing, of bullying dockyard workers, and watching over every phase of the old ship's repairs and refit. And she was old. 22 years had passed since her good Kentish oak had first tasted salt water, and almost all the time she had been in continuous commission. From the freezing misery of the Atlantic to maddening calms in the Indies, from the broadsides of the Mediterranean to patient blockade duty off one enemy port or another. When she had been docked, Bolitho had seen weed nearly 6 feet long scraped from her fat bilges. No wonder she had been so slow. Now, outwardly at least, she looked a new ship. He watched the strange silvery light play across her tall side as she swung heavily at her anchor. Even at this distance, he could see the taut black tracery of her rigging and shrouds, the double line of gunports, the small scarlet rectangle made by her ensign as it stood out in the freshening wind. Once it had seemed as if the refit, the work and delays would never end. Then, in the last few weeks, she had returned to the waiting sea. Her rigging had been set up, her 74 guns replaced, the deep-bellied hull filled with stores, provisions, powder and shot. And men. Bolitho straightened his back. 6 months was a long while to be away from her natural element. This time she would not be returning with the seasoned, well-disciplined company he had taken command of 16 months ago, most of whom had been aboard for 4 years. In that time you could expect even the dullest landsman to find his place in things. But those men had been paid off, not to a well-earned rest, but scattered to the demands of an ever-growing fleet, leaving him with only a few of the senior ones, who were needed to deal with the ship's more intimate repairs.